I'm Emily Alphen Johnson, VPR Digital Producer. I just wanted to let you know that this episode of Vermont Edition has been edited for clarity and brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. After a record high number of high school seniors applying to colleges in the last 10 years or so, crested in the last couple years, those numbers have begun to decline. And a deep trough is expected to hit in less than a decade as a slowdown in the birth rate after the 2008 recession catches up with college enrollment. A Boston Globe review of undergraduate enrollment trends across New England over the past 20 years shows that 20% of the 118 four-year private colleges in the region have seen their enrollment drop by at least 10%. Looking ahead, not all of our colleges and universities are going to survive. Just recently, we've seen layoffs at Castleton University. Vermont Technical College had to lay off 36 people or offer them early retirement just a couple years ago. And other schools, like the College of St. Joseph, are cutting tuition and offering laptops to try to entice students to campus as enrollment drops precipitously. We're going to look at some of the challenges facing Vermont's small colleges and universities today and how they're trying to adjust. Susan Stitely is the president of the Association of Vermont Independent Colleges, representing 17 private colleges in Vermont and accounting for 19,000 students. Susan, it's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Jane. It's nice to be here.
Tom Green is the founding president of the Vermont College of Fine Arts in Montpelier. In 2014, he joined the New England Association of Schools and Colleges Commission on Institutions of Higher Education. That's the body that's responsible for accrediting colleges and universities in New England. It's nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me back, Jane.
All right. So we can safely say now that the Generation Y or millennial baby boom of the 80s and 90s is pretty much over. We're seeing the birth rate decline. We're seeing college enrollment decline. There's no way all of the colleges and universities that are in existence today can survive, right?
Well, I mean, I think most prognosticators think we're in a period of sort of profound disruptive change in higher education. I think the Boston Globe story that you cited suggests as many as 500 colleges will close nationally over the next 10 years. And if you think about the landscape of higher education and that there may be 3,500 colleges in the country, that's a really significant number.
Yeah. So, I mean, so yes, they're not all going to survive. Do you agree, Susan?
I agree with what Tom said, but I think our colleges are really making an effort. They're small, and they're going to stay small, and they're developing strategies for recruiting students.
I want to talk about those strategies because this is the way that colleges are trying to adjust, trying to make sure that they get students who come to them. I mean, if you have a limited pool of students, you have to perhaps be more appealing than you did in the past. But before we get into that, Susan, are you seeing trends in the types of colleges that are really struggling right now? Because not all are seeing a decline in enrollment.
No, not all in Vermont are seeing a decline in enrollment. Many are having an increase, and maybe a small increase, but they are seeing increases. The very, very smaller schools are the ones that are probably struggling the most and reaching out to students. We have very strong mission-driven colleges with unique niches, and I think that's appealing. So it's really focusing that message and getting that message out there to students.
Tom, is being small, being rural, a difficult place to be if you're a college these days?
I mean, I think in general, yes. And Susan just made a really good point, which is the idea of colleges with a unique niche and mission. Because I think when you see the colleges that are going to get through this trough and survive it are the ones that cater to a specific audience. I do think the most dangerous place to be in higher education is small, rural, residential, non-elite. You know, we're seeing something happen in higher education where which in some ways is mirroring what's happening in the country, where the elite colleges are getting wealthier and wealthier. Smaller residential liberal arts undergraduate colleges are struggling more to compete for students. But here in Vermont, we have schools like Landmark that work with just disabled students. I'm sorry, learning disabled students. We have a place like Sterling College, which is doing really groundbreaking work in sustainability and ecology. You have a private military college in Norwich. At Vermont College of Fine Arts, you have a single focus arts institution. We have the top environmental law school in the country. So I think in some ways Vermont is a little better positioned than I would say the rest of New England to weather this demographic shift.
We actually got a tweet today from Tim Patterson, who's the director of admissions at Sterling College. And he said he was looking forward to today's show. And he said, I'm at a college fair this morning. The struggle is real and digital storytelling is the future for recruitment. You know, when you talk about how colleges are trying to recruit and trying to reframe themselves for the generation entering college now, Susan, what are you seeing? Tom mentioned some of the colleges that have sort of niche markets. What are you seeing?
I'm seeing that colleges are watching what's happening in the world and trying to be relevant to that and to students. So environmental stewardship is strong. There's issues, freedom of speech. Jobs are also on everyone's mind. So colleges are really telling their stories and reaching out to students on the things that they care about. And certainly they're telling their stories on social media.
Is that important to have a good story these days?
I think it is. I mean, because it really helps bring the college to life and what goes on the campus and what you can accomplish there and how you can achieve your dream.
I want to talk more about these strategies, but just to put a little bit of a fine point on it, you know, this is in some ways the bursting of a higher education bubble that you could see it coming. I mean, schools just adding buildings, adding sort of accoutrement that didn't seem necessary in some cases, or colleges expanding, and you could see the demographic trends coming. So is it necessarily a bad thing if we have a contracting of colleges, or even if some colleges have to just close altogether, Tom? I mean, it just seems like common sense in some ways. What's the problem?
Well, I mean, I think higher education is no different than any other industry in that regard. I mean, it's hard to think that somehow we're separate. I think the public perception idea is that higher education is built so much for the long haul. You know, Daniel Patrick Moynihan once said, if you want to start a great community, start a college and wait 300 years. And so we tend to think in those spans of time. But I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. There always has been shakeups in higher ed. I mean, there are articles from 1900 that say higher education in trouble. So I don't think this time is particularly different. How we navigate it is going to be key.
Is there a problem, though, if we look at which types of colleges and universities might be closing, that there could be this sort of cratering out? Because I could, and maybe I want to be corrected here if this is a wrong assumption, but I'm looking at it and thinking, well, perhaps you're seeing colleges like community colleges or two-year colleges that can help people have an affordable college education and then go on to two more years at perhaps a residential school that's more expensive might be doing okay. Or colleges that have sort of a niche focus. Also, elite colleges are doing well. Middlebury College is doing well. Dartmouth is doing well.
Yes.
These colleges also have very large endowments. I was looking at the endowments this morning. Middlebury's is $1 billion. Dartmouth is almost $5 billion. So if you have those sort of two sets that are doing pretty well, is there a cratering out of these colleges that are smaller, less elite, perhaps in some cases more affordable, and that might affect which types of students are able to get the education that they want?
I would say that's true, and I would say as higher education leaders, we need to do a better job of advocating for the value of higher education and what it actually does. There is so much talk about cost. It's real. It's very hard to afford higher ed. I think we understand that. At the same time, it's the best individual investment someone can make. Your average college four-year student is graduating with $28,000 of debt, really the cost of a Volkswagen. Yet their earning potential with a BA over their lifetime is over $1 million more. There's nowhere in the world you can invest $28,000 and get a $1 million return, so that's really significant. Also, the value of the liberal arts and the value of communication. I think there has been a zeitgeist change in this country where people think about higher ed only in vocational terms. What job am I going to get? When in fact, the values and skills that most corporations in America is really looking for now is the ability to communicate. English majors are in huge demand on Wall Street and other places. So I think, you know, it's
really on- if I were to apply to a Wall Street job right now, having a liberal arts degree is going to get me in the door.
It is going to be more valuable than other degrees. I mean, there's a video online of the CEO at Goldman Sachs making the argument that English majors are the most valuable because this is a communication age we live in.
So, all right, I'd be curious to – I would love to go in with two resumes, one where I have an econ degree and one where I have, you know, an English degree, and just see which of those profiles does better. It's an interesting tactic. You know, that cost thing is a big one, and we have a lot of people who want to talk about that. And again, our number, if you want to share your perspective, is 800-639-2211. Daniel, who's currently a junior at Marlborough College, wrote to say in part – as a student at one of these small Vermont schools, cost is a major issue. Everyone knows college is expensive, and this is more and more becoming a deciding factor in where a student goes. Some young people are deciding it just isn't worth it to bankrupt themselves and go into debt to get a college education. This is part of a larger problem that small colleges in Vermont can't fix alone. Some people have decided it's better to save up to buy a house than go to college. Who can blame them? This is something that needs to be addressed on both a state and a national level. And David writes, my freshman year at Marlborough College was just under $15,000, all-inclusive. Pretty sure today it would be unaffordable, even with a decent financial aid package. And let's go to Andrew, who's calling in from Woodstock. Hi, Andrew.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I've been hearing some really great comments from some of your other speakers about the cost of college, and more specifically about the fact that getting a college education really is an investment in your future. And I think that's an important thing for our young people to remember right now. I work in admissions at a college in Boston, and that's something that I tell all the students that I meet with. It might be a really big cost up front, but it is really important to recognize that getting a job is a lot easier when you have a bachelor's degree. But it can still be tricky, and I think that's something that a lot of these kids are worried about, is making a huge investment in their education and worrying that they may not be able to find a job. I know that was something that I struggled with for a little bit when I got out of college myself. So I'd like to hear some thoughts about that, if you wouldn't mind. Thanks for taking my call.
Andrew, thanks for your perspective as an admissions counselor and trying to talk to high school students about this. Susan, what do you think?
One of the things that colleges are doing to address that issue is aligning some of their programs with the needs of employers and letting students know about that. So internships and career opportunities are huge at all the colleges, and they're working with students so that that jobs can be found. And a majority of the students, I believe, at the private colleges are able to find work afterwards. So that's certainly something that colleges are aware of and working to make sure that there are opportunities. And just following up on liberal arts and the skill of critical thinking, which is one of the huge values of a liberal arts education. People change not just jobs, but careers at least 7 times or more now. So a liberal arts background prepares you for those kinds of changes, that you can switch jobs and entire careers over your lifetime.
Are those two things incompatible, though, what you just said about the value of a liberal arts education, and yet also colleges really trying to hew more closely to the jobs that are out there? We certainly see Governor Scott and Governor Shumlin before him really pushing hard on STEM skills, for example. Well, you know, you could see a school really moving away from the English degrees and towards the technology, towards the engineering degrees, and so away from liberal arts. Are you seeing schools making that shift, or is there a way to balance both?
I think there's a way to balance both. I don't see them shifting away from liberal arts, but I see them adding things that are needed in the economy, like STEM degrees.
Tom?
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think, a lot of schools have added professional programs that are doing really well. I can think of a lot of colleges in Vermont that now have robust nursing programs because there's a direct need. That's a way that I think higher education has really responded to the needs of the marketplace in Vermont and what's needed in terms of employment.
Today, we're talking about the challenges facing small rural colleges. Declining enrollment around the country means that many colleges are likely to have to reinvent themselves or perhaps close altogether over the next decade or so. We're exploring what that means for Vermont's institutes of higher education, and we'd love your take, your experience if you work in this field, if you are a student or looking back on a recent college career yourself, or maybe a parent trying to figure out what's happening with college and university education. We're talking today with Susan Stitely, president of the Association of Vermont Independent Colleges, and Tom Green, president of the Vermont College of Fine Arts and a member of the group that does the accreditation process for colleges and universities in New England. But it's not just private colleges that are facing new realities. State schools are also feeling the pressure. And joining us now is the chancellor of the Vermont State College System, Jeb Spaulding. Jeb, it's nice to have you back with us.
Hey, Jane. Nice to be here. And hello to Susan and Tom.
So we've been talking about some of the ways that small independent colleges are struggling and some of the ways that they're working on adjusting and trying to figure out new models or consolidate, maybe downsize a little bit to a new model. What about state schools? Do you imagine that in 15 or 20 years, the Vermont state college system will still have the same number of schools that it does today?
That's our plan. Whether the campuses look the same as they do now, whether CCV, Community College of Vermont, will have 12 locations or 15 locations or 8 locations, I can't tell you that. A third of their courses now are delivered online. So do I think CCV and all the colleges and universities in the state college system will exist? I certainly do. Will they look the same as they do now? Probably not. So, and, you know, it's interesting. I heard what Tom said, Jane. I think if I could get it pretty close to right, he said, small, rural, tuition-dependent, non-elite colleges and universities are the ones that are under the most pressure.
And residential.
And residential. And, you know, we certainly have those. And in Vermont, we have the lowest state support per FTE for public colleges in the country, and that translates into some of the highest tuitions in the country. So, you know, we really operate a lot. Or I would say that the Castleton and Northern Vermont University operate very much like an independent college in terms of their revenue generation.
Maybe you can explain, too, given what we're talking about, this shifting landscape, why moving to a university status might be part of this change in approach or change in perspective. Castleton used to be Castleton State College. Now it's Castleton University. And, of course, Northern Vermont University was Lyndon State College and Johnson State College.
Yeah, I think it reflects both the evolution to date and the dreams of the future. And you know, they're organizing efforts like, you know, their meteorology programs at Lyndon and their COPLAC status at Johnson, and recognizing that they have changed over the years. There certainly also is a marketing aspect to it. And you know, when we talk to the students that are either already on campus or prospective students, they feel that their credential will have a little bit more pizzazz to it with the university. And there is no hard and fast definition of which is a university and which is a college. Otherwise, Dartmouth College would be Dartmouth University, and it isn't.
So I'm curious to bring here in Susan and Tom, because your perspective from outside the state college system, and here you hear Jeb Spalding talking about state colleges and in many ways facing some of the same challenges as small independent schools. But what do you think about the state college system when you look at it here in Vermont, which in some ways you could say, what a boon, they get some state funding, but then also they get a lot less state funding than most states do. Susan, what do you think?
It is so true that they get less funding than most states. So it creates more challenges for them, and they are a much-needed part of our college system. With the state colleges and the private colleges, we have 24 or 25 colleges that makes Vermont an education destination, so they really need support as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the biggest difference between the Vermont State Colleges system and any of the other colleges is that, you know, we're predominantly Vermonters. And, you know, over 80%, if you look at the system as a whole, from Castleton Community College, Vermont Tech, Northern Vermont University, we're over 80% Vermonters, and half of them are the first in their family to go to college and are Pell eligible. So, you know, our ability to generate private funding or philanthropic funding is very different than the others. But the general pressures are the same. And, you know, you mentioned, Jane, that maybe in the last couple of years, the enrollment trend sort of capped off with the number of students. And, you know, we've seen this challenge coming for a while. There are now 25% fewer students in 12th grade in Vermont than there was a decade ago. And, you know, if you sort of look at the births and the projections that the demographers will point out, you know, we're kind of in a stage now where we've almost leveled off for a few years, but the projections are for a continued dip in the next 5 to 10 years. And, you know, if you look at the birth rate in Vermont, 2016 had the lowest number of births since the Civil War, and 2017 preliminary numbers are less than that. So, you know, when you look 10, 15, 20 years down the road, it's not like the population or the demographics are going to turn around. So what we need to do is, you know, realize that when things are challenging, that's when creativity has a chance to bloom.
Like what? What is the state college system doing that's really creative? Because you talk about this decline in enrollment, and certainly the state college system is built for students of this state. But we also know that schools like UVM really rely on outside students in order to have enough money to survive, because you get, what, about 16% of your funding comes from the state?
Yes. Yeah, overall. And that would vary, you know, that a place like Castleton, it's closer to 9 or 10% because they have, you know, it's a bigger enrollment. So, but, you know, the kind of things we're doing, I'll just give you a few quick ones, Jane.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'd like to find a lot of other places that have been able to unify two separately accredited independent colleges into one accredited college or university, in this case, with two campuses. I mean, that if it wasn't a pretty, you know, challenging time, I think the politics of that would have been very difficult. And we're doing that to provide not just savings, and we're saving over $1 million in executive management in this year alone, and it's a transition year, but we're plowing that money back in to improve the student experience. You know, we have are going to be able to offer more classes to students on both campuses. We'll have professors going back and forth from both campuses. The students will be able to, this year the Johnson field trip to Cuba didn't have enough students in it. Next year when Northern Vermont University is Johnson and Linden together, it will have enough students in it. So it's a pretty exciting example of the kind of creativity that we're working on. We're also really pushing shared services, and the independents are doing this. St. Michael's, Champlain, and Middlebury are looking for ways to consolidate their sort of accounting functions and their IT functions and so forth, and we certainly are doing that in a big way by shared ERPs, you know, sort of big guts level IT systems and accounting functions, and so we're pushing that too. And you know, we're also recognizing that we have to continue to provide a vibrant, relevant experience for the traditional college students, but we, as the public school system for Vermont, have to provide appropriate post-secondary education for those non-traditional college students that are in Vermont. There are close to between 2,500 and 3,000 students that graduate from high school in Vermont every June that have no plans for post-secondary education. Now, a lot of them will, you know, could benefit from a traditional liberal arts four-year program, but many of them are also going to be looking for other kinds of post-secondary credentials and certificates. So we're developing, based on market demand, below diplomas that are that generate credit, but that you can get a certified bookkeeping certificate through Community College of Vermont. And there are examples like that throughout the system. So there's a lot of creativity going on right now, and actually state policy too. You know, the early college program allows seniors in high school to combine that senior year of high school with their first year of college, which if you were getting an associate's degree from Vermont Technical College or CCV would mean you'd have a 50% reduction in your tuition cost, or at the in the system a 25% reduction in your four-year tuition.
Well, that's Jeb Spalding, Chancellor for the Vermont State College System. Jeb, thank you very much for talking a little bit with us about what's happening at the state college level. Appreciate your time.
It's a pleasure.
Not only the state college is offering that kind of advanced college courses while you're in high school, we know that St. Michael's College offers a free college course, try to entice students in so that they can get a credit while they're in high school, might also cut down on some costs, and one way to try to get students interested in the college as they go forward. Let's go to Maurice, who's calling in from Montpelier. Hi, Maurice. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. I just want to put the 2 cents in. There's still a negative connotation toward people going to vocational schools and getting technical degrees in 2 years or less, coming out with a very good degree that they can use anywhere in the world. And we don't even, it's negatively pushed in high schools. If you can't go to college, we shove you into the vo-tech. Very discouraging. I've been on vocational advisory boards, and the negative connotation in the legislature and people in general is very discouraging. Hmm. And that's where I'll leave it.
Maurice, I appreciate your perspective. Tom Green, do you think that's true? Is that changing? I mean, you work at a school that's dedicated to the liberal arts. Do you, the other side, see that the reputation of vocational schools shifting or changing?
I Vermont may be a little slower on this development, I think, than what's happening in other states. I mean, I see in places like Connecticut and Massachusetts from my role on the commission that there are really ingrained vocational programs that are specifically targeted that are providing a tremendous service for the right students who want to come out and find the right kind of employment in the community in which they live. It's a little harder in Vermont because we're more dispersed, because we don't have the same level of industry other states have. But I do think there's some real innovation happening in other parts of New England on this.
Well, let's take up that idea of innovation and what's happening now in Vermont schools. We've established not everybody's going to survive, but for the schools who are, part of it is finding a niche. Part of it is figuring out which students are attracted to you and how you can actually get them to enroll. I mean, we're seeing the College of St. Joseph, for example, as I said, cutting tuition offering free laptops, helping to pay for books. Surely, though, that's not sustainable if you don't then have the funds coming in. Susan, what are you seeing for schools that are both trying to be affordable, be appealing, and sustain themselves?
I'm seeing that the colleges are trying to create new streams of revenue. We have a lot of colleges going to online programs, I mean, adding online programs. They're also adding new programs. Sterling College has added a new program on American Farmstead. Other colleges are adding new courses as well. Green Mountain College has just added a course on integrative health, resilient communities, and social justice. And colleges are also reaching out in the summertime and utilizing their campuses and having pre-college courses or programs for students so that they can get involved and see what it's like to be on college to encourage them to go. Also, many of the colleges, the state and public colleges, participate in a dual enrollment program where high school seniors and juniors can take up to two courses on a college campus to help them see that they can succeed.
And to get a little bit of credit under their belts.
Yes.
And maybe make that slightly more affordable by having that credit that they don't then have to do once they get out of high school.
Yes, absolutely.
Tom Green, we've talked about residency as one of the barriers, and I know that the Vermont College of Fine Arts is a low residency school.
Mm-hmm.
And so for many students, they're doing most of their work at home or in their home communities and then coming to campus occasionally, and that goes for professors as well. Does that help you sustain yourself in this new economy?
Well, it does. I mean, you know, we have a 19th century system of education. Still. And so this is a way to really bring in the 21st century because people are increasingly mobile. So we bring in faculty and students, depending on the program, around 10 days every 6 months for every program. Our campus is full almost year-round, but people are coming in small batches. And I think the benefit of that is that it's not a barrier to entry, and also that our focus is really exclusively on academics. We don't have a football team. We have a softball game. That's about the extent of the sports we get. Our instruction costs is where we tend to put our money, which is different than what's happened with residential higher education over the last particularly 10 to 15 years.
So what do you see in terms of innovation and how schools are going to survive?
Well, I mean, I think you look at a place like Norwich, which now has an incredibly robust online program, has moved into, a traditional military college, has become a place to go to get an MBA. And so I think schools are diversifying their revenue sources. They're adding new programs. They are acknowledging the fact that we live in a mobile culture where people want the freedom to work as well as to go to school. And so I think you're seeing a lot of those changes happen in Vermont, particularly the private colleges.
Well, it's really interesting to think about and to talk about, and I appreciate both of you being on the show today and sharing your expertise and your experience with us. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane.
My pleasure, Jane.
Susan Stitely is the president of the Association of Vermont Independent Colleges, which represents 17 private colleges in the state and accounts for 19,000 students. Tom Green is president of the Vermont College of Fine Arts. In 2014, he joined the New England Association of Schools and Colleges Commission on Institutions of Higher Education, which is responsible for accrediting colleges and universities in New England.